drive to create things. You're a writer, a photographer, a musician, a maker. You're ready to make things happen.
But chasing creative isn't always easy. Your time and energy go to your work, your family, and your life. Is it really possible to make space for the creative in your everyday?
Here at the Chasing Creative Podcast, we believe you can. We're talking to everyday creatives who have insights and action steps you can take today to make your creative plans happen.
I'm Ashley Brooks, a freelance writer and editor at Brooks Editorial and work-at-home mom who would love to devote more time to creative writing and journaling.
And I'm Abigail Krebs, the writer and photographer behind Inkwells and Images. I'm living my creative life nights and weekends after I get home from my full-time job at an ad agency.
And you're listening to the Chasing Creative Podcast. Today we're chatting with Lindsay Crandall. Lindsay is a photographer and writer living in upstate New York. She is half of the daily collaboration at HelloThereFriend.com. She has written for Arthouse America and The Curator. Most recently, Lindsay began working as a photographer with Stocksy United. So welcome to the Chasing Creative Podcast, Lindsay.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you here chatting with us. We've noticed kind of a trend where there are lots of photographers and writers who sort of combine both those talents, including Abby, who's a photographer and a writer. So we're excited to chat with you about that today.
Thanks. I'm excited to talk about that too. They're two of my favorite things.
Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about where you're at in life now and how you got here?
It's such a big question. Like, what are you doing with your life? Like, where are you with things? And I feel like, you know, it is a complicated answer because it is something that feels like so all-encompassing. Like, if you're asking me, you know, about my creative journey, it like goes back to when I was a child and I would spend lots and lots of time drawing pictures and writing stories. And it's like those two things have kind of carried me throughout my life because I've always been interested in art, and that has sort of like evolved into becoming a photographer. And I have always been interested in writing and have been a writer like throughout my entire life. And I went to graduate school for creative writing, and since then have just had my hand in being a writer in a lot of different ways. And so those two things have kind of converged at this point where I have, you know, a little of this and a little of that, and it takes shape in a lot of different ways, from like having a blog and starting a business and doing like just some little odd jobs on the side here and there where nobody ever sees my byline. And, you know, those have been like steady things that have stayed with me all along is writing and some sort of art that now is like evolved into primarily photography.
Okay. So how have you, I guess, grown as a photographer in the last few years? You said it's, you know, always been something you do and that you'd be a photographer no matter what. You know, kind of where did you start taking like portraits of other people?
That probably started like so many other women when my daughter was born that, you know, she was like my primary source of like, she was the primary person that I was taking pictures of. But I was interested in photography before that, like before I ever had gotten pregnant. I took a class in photography in college. And then, you know, once like digital cameras became a thing, it was like so easy to just kind of get lost in that, like, oh, you can take a million pictures. And like, this is a lot of fun and really interesting. And it was cool to try to like experiment with what that meant versus like what film had meant. You know, it was like after my daughter was born that I got my first DSLR. And just from there, like, it's just interesting to me, like, when you're out searching for these things, how these resources come to you. And I met people online and they would recommend books. And, you know, then I ended up getting into like some forums where there was really great information, and just always like trying to develop like a sense of style and a sense of like better technical skills and stuff like that. So my kids have really been like the biggest source of me taking pictures, but I really started getting into doing portraits of other people about 2 years ago. And I thought that I was, well, I did start a photography business thinking that I was going to go forward being a portrait photographer. And I did that for a summer before realizing that I wasn't really sure that it was how I wanted to spend my time. Not that there's anything wrong with that, and not that there's anything wrong with having a business, but it was a lot of the business side and hustle, hustle, hustle. And I kind of got sucked into that approach to, you know, having a business and the keeping up with the Joneses that can go on when you're checking up on other people's photography and what they're doing and then trying to match up with what they're doing. So I really had to kind of take a step back from all of that. And I feel really fortunate because I have just recently gotten involved with Stocksy United, which is a stock photography co-op. And the people that are working with them are, the photographers are just like absolutely amazing. And I feel really honored to be a part of that. But what I like about it is the amount of creative control that it gives me in terms of conceptualizing like what it is that I want to shoot and then going ahead and actually doing that. So if I want to shoot portraits, you know, I can come up with like an idea for like an entire photo session and shoot that. Or if I want to do, you know, still life, or if I want to shoot nature, or if I want to shoot self-portraits, like it gives me the ability to like explore all of the different types of photography that I like and not just be like focused exclusively on doing portraits for a business for clients who are going to pay me.
Absolutely. That sounds like you have a lot more creative freedom and you kind of get to do a little bit more of what interests you rather than, you know, going on 8 family photo shoots a weekend, which is definitely stressful and exhausting and can lead to burnout really quickly.
Yeah, that's really what I found was that it just felt like I was just running from one thing to the next. And it was taking away some of the joy of photography for me. And I have just done a lot of soul searching about it and realized that like, I want to feel happy with my life. You know, I don't want to just get sucked into like hustle, hustle, hustle and run around all the time. And so like I had to let go of that, but I feel fortunate that like I've continued to pursue my photography and, you know, it's led to other opportunities, which have been like so amazing. So it was hard to let go of it, but it's turned out for the better.
Yeah. And I like how you said that, how it's so easy when you're doing something creative online and you're trying to turn it into a business, how you kind of turn into this whole keeping up with the Joneses mindset and you feel like you need to hustle. And all of a sudden you're defining success based on followers and website views and probably how much money you're making. And really, that is like a really good way to kill your creative joy and sort of kill your creativity altogether. And I like it, the point that you're making, that sometimes to be your most creative self, you need to step back from all that and learn to define creative success in a different way, maybe than everybody else is defining it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I feel like if it doesn't give me some sort of sense of joy and, you know, make my heart sing, then like, what's the point of doing it? I just really feel like if I'm going to go forward and doing something creative, that's what I want. I want to feel like it's filling me up and making me, you know, just like excited. I love the excitement of like learning something new, or, you know, when you're doing something creative and you can feel how it can, you know, it just makes you feel great on the inside. And that's what I wanted. And it's great if that aligns with having a business or having a blog or having something, you know, that looks from the outside like it's, you know, quote unquote successful. But my life, I feel like it's just really important to feel fulfilled in that, whether there's any sort of, you know, compensation that comes on the other side of it.
No, that is a great point. I know you can look as successful as you want to on the outside and not be successful at all because you don't feel successful. So I really like that you've figured out how to draw that line for yourself, or I suppose it's a constantly moving line.
Yeah, it is, because it is. It's easy to get out of balance or lose focus, and it is very, very difficult when you're on the internet and you can see what everybody else is doing, and you see it all from the outside. You don't see what's going on the inside. And sometimes, you know, there have been many times that I felt like my life is such a mess and I can't seem to get it together. And I'm, you know, I get almost frustrated with going to the internet and seeing everybody else's like perfect version of what they're displaying, and also feeling guilty because that's exactly the same thing that I do. You know, it's like, this is my best work. This is what I'm putting out there, and everybody else is doing it, but everybody else doesn't see the junk that you're dealing with. And everybody else doesn't see that, you know, it's like when you're exhausted and you're crying all day, or, you know, you're just having like such a hard time with like a relationship or like anything that's going on. And that is where like it does, you can get so far out of balance. And I've felt that, and I have had to like pull myself back and say, you know, what really matters here? Maybe it's time to take a break. And I am like notorious for just getting offline for like a week at a time and saying, you know what, I need to kind of like get back to basics and like do things the old fashioned way instead of just getting on like Instagram and like scrolling and scrolling and scrolling.
No, that is really great advice for, I think, any creative out there. I know a friend once shared with me the quote, and it went something like, we get really frustrated when we ourselves are watching our whole movie, but we only see someone else's highlight reel. So like the best of the best, like you said, you only post what you're really proud of online. And if, you know, that famous Instagrammer has this like perfectly curated layout of her clothes and jewelry and coffee, the thing with the Instagram photo is you can't hear maybe the toddler screaming in the background while she took it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can attest to the truth of that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's hard because I feel like guilty about that sometimes too, because I don't ever want to give anybody like a false sense that my life is amazing or wonderful. There's no way around that. That part is like really hard. If you're putting stuff out there, unless you're, you know, it's like you can either be the person who's constantly like keeping it real and, you know, kind of being a Debbie Downer about life, because life is really hard and we're all like in the junk all together, you know, or showing these are like the great moments of my life. You know, I feel guilty about that sometimes because I do want to be real. But there's like this, the internet and social media, it's like, it's all artificial. And like, we all need to know it and like kind of take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. And it is really hard to strike that balance because as an artist, you do want to put your best stuff out there. It's not like you want to share people like your half-written journal entries or like some project that you decided to scrap halfway through because it wasn't working out. So it's really easy to accidentally end up curating this perfect looking life on the outside. And it's not necessarily something that's easy for us to balance with showing those more real and humble moments. But one thing I noticed about you, Lindsay, that you put right on the very front of your website is that you are trying to live an actively creative life. And I love the phrasing of that so much. So what does being actively creative look like for you right now? And has it ever changed during different seasons of life?
So being actively creative, like I feel like that was something that I had to tell myself, like I am a creative person and I want to continually pursue that. Because I realized at one point that I could be sitting on the couch watching reality TV and like wasting all my time, or I needed to decide if I was going to be the kind of person who was going to get up and do stuff. And I mean, we all have those moments. And I was like, I want to be the kind of person who's going to get up and do stuff. I want to do stuff and I want to pursue what's interesting to me. And I want to go out there and just see what's out there. And so to me, being actively creative is like kind of the difference between the whole creating versus consuming. So, you know, we can sit and we can consume television and movies and social media, and even to some extent like book reading and stuff like that. So, you know, we can pursue these things and we can do it for the sake of inspiration, not necessarily just to pass the time so that, you know, we have something to do. There's a difference between, you know, just giving up our time to doing something that's fruitless versus like actively taking the position to, you know, go out and do something and try something and figure out what is that thing that, like, you know, makes your heart sing, or what is that thing that is like so interesting that you want to continue to pursue it. It's that, to me, it's the creating and consuming difference. But I also think that there's an ebb and a flow to all of it too. I mean, it's not like all the time I'm just like, I'm creating, you know, in every spare moment of my life. I think that there's a time to kind of pull back. I've actually been in a time recently where I had to pull back. We moved over the summer and it was like really hard on me and it was hard on my family. And it was like unexpectedly hard. Like I expected it to be very like simple. We moved 20 minutes away and I thought, you know, we're just going to pick up everything from our house and we're going to like move to the next house and put everything down and we're just going to pick up where we left off. And it was nothing like that. It was really hard. And I especially had a hard time. And I feel like it was like I wanted to do all of the things that I had been doing. I wanted to be shooting my camera a lot and I wanted to be writing and I wanted to be like doing stuff with my kids. And it all kind of stopped. I just got kind of jammed up as we were making this huge transition. And I finally got to a point where I was, again, like, I need to get back to basics and I need to just figure out how to live every day in this new house without putting on any pressure that I needed to be creative or I needed to do a certain thing or I needed to, like, meet some expectation that basically I was just putting on myself. And it's not until probably the last couple of months, like around November, that I feel like things just started. It was like the flow time started. Like the ebb time was over and the flow time started. And I could just kind of feel how I was settling into what this new life looks like and start pursuing the things that I was interested in creatively pursuing again. And so I definitely think that there's like, you know, a time to kind of get into the creativity and like really push and press on in terms of being like actively creative. But I think that there's also a time where it's like knowing that you need to take a break and that there's nothing wrong with that. I think that like the idea of showing up every day and doing the work, and that's great. And that's the kind of stuff that gives you like the foundation so that when you need to take a break, you can step out and you don't lose everything that you've accumulated. And that when you're in that flow time, that you're just ready for like the mad rush of inspiration to come through you. It's important. It's all important to like, if you are interested in trying to figure out what a creative life means, to step into it and to try to figure out, you know, how to engage that part of your life in a regular way so that you can be there for the inspired times and you can understand that it's okay to step back during the dry time.
So, I mean, getting down to some practical steps, I know you're talking about how, you know, creativity ebbs and flows and you really have to kind of get into that creative routine so that when inspiration does strike, you're ready for it. You've got that foundation built. So how do you practically in like, say on a regular old Tuesday, make time for your creativity or make room for your creativity? What are some things that you just know are reliable ways to kind of exercise your creativity?
Well, for me, it is very much photography related. And, so I'll give you an example. This morning I went grocery shopping and I decided that I was going to treat myself and get some tulips. And when I brought them home, I just sort of like put them in a vase and set them aside for a little while. And later in the afternoon, I started cutting them open and it was just the light was coming in the window the right way. And I was like, okay. And I started setting things up and I got my camera out and started taking pictures. And then I had my kids hold the flowers and, you know, I took their pictures and it was like, it wasn't like I planned that when I bought the flowers, you know, it started happening. This moment started happening and the light was coming in really nicely from the kitchen window. And I would say that it probably, the reliable thing to me is to continually be like paying attention and noticing what's going on around me, because these little moments, these little things happen all day, every day. And it's just a matter sometimes of being in the right place at the right time, or sometimes of just taking a minute to like look up and see something that's going on and be ready to grab the camera or be ready to grab the pen or whatever you're using to like capture your creative moment.
Yeah, I love that idea of just being open to creativity instead of necessarily, like you were saying earlier, how you didn't want to make it that you were putting all this pressure and expectation on yourself, because sometimes that's the best way to give yourself writer's block or any sort of creative block. So I really enjoy that perspective that you just need to be paying attention to the world around you. Because I'm trying to look at creativity in my own life as less of something that I have to find like a dedicated time for and more of something that I can just blend with everyday life. And I feel like that's going to be a really great perspective to take on that.
Yeah, I feel like it's a challenge to try to like incorporate that into just like daily living. But I think, you know, the Flaubert quote that says, you know, be regular and ordinary in your daily life so that you can be like wildly creative in your work. I'm not saying it exactly the way that it is, but yeah, that like, you know, life is always going to be mundane. It's going to be filled with boring tasks, you know, washing the dishes, taking care of babies, taking showers, doing all, you know, cleaning your house, going to the grocery store.
Flossing
like the stuff.
Is the worst.
Yes. And like life is always going to be filled with those things in those ordinary moments. Like those give us an opportunity to like look around and pay attention to like other things that are going on, or even like seeking out the beauty in those ordinary moments. That is, I think, one of the things that drew me most to photography was like just looking at life, not setting anything up, not creating anything, but just saying, what in my life can I like celebrate through a photograph that's just like an ordinary moment? And that was bigger to me. Like when my daughter was born, yes, I took lots and lots of pictures of her, but you know, she wasn't the only thing that inspired me to take pictures. And there were lots of other things. I would just look around my house and be like, what is like beautiful in this house? Like, what is beautiful in this moment? And realizing that like there are all sorts of beautiful things around us. We don't necessarily take the time to pay attention to them, but like even messes are beautiful. Even like the stuff that we think in our regular life that is not anything that's beautiful, we can find beauty in that. And I took a lot of time to kind of like flesh out what that meant for me and embrace the fact that life is extremely ordinary, but that we can have these like creative celebrations throughout all of that.
That is an amazing way to just go about looking at life, Lindsay. Thank you for sharing that with us. I'm going to kind of move us on along here into a little bit of a different topic and go back to writing. So do you think, and this is kind of a hybrid question maybe, does your writing ever inform your photography or vice versa? Does one or the other kind of prompt you to do the opposite on a different day or to write about what you photographed?
I thought a lot about this, and the answer is no, it doesn't. I think that, I think if anything, being a writer trained me in how to pay attention to those moments that now I find much more easy and satisfactory to capture with my camera. And so I think it's just, again, about like noticing, paying attention, looking, just looking, you know, because like when I was in graduate school, I was studying poetry and writing poetry. And, you know, that so much about a poem, it can be so short in such a brief moment, or it's one moment that turns into another moment that turns into another moment. You're using language, you're, you know, fleshing out images and concepts, and it really requires you to like slow down and pay attention to what you're trying to describe, how you're trying to describe it, what you're looking for, where is it going next. And so I do feel like those same concepts that were built into my practice of writing poetry are the same sort of things that I've built into my practice of photography.
No, that's a really great point of just making sure kind of the skill set that you have. I mean, obviously you have a graduate degree in creative writing. You spent a lot of time developing those skills, and those were helpful as you moved into the photography realm more. That's just kind of a wonderful lesson that as creatives, everything you know is important for the next step that you're going to take.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with that. That like you don't even know as you like accumulate all the skills and all the things that you know, whatever you're curious about, whatever you're pursuing, I think none of it's fruitless. It's always going to take you to the next thing after that. And that you don't know when you're going to call upon those skills, or you don't know when you're going to call upon something that you learned. And I think that that is like just one of the coolest things. Like, it's just so cool to see like how those types of like bunny trails can occur like in your own life or in somebody else's life, that you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, there have been many times that I have just been like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. I don't know what's happening, and like deep lamenting over like, why did I do all this? What is the point of all of this? But I can honestly say that like, there is not anything that I've ever done or worked on that didn't either provide me with like a new skill set or just launch me into the next thing after that, that was the thing I was supposed to be doing or the next place that I should have been going. So I do think that it's really important to just pursue whatever it is that you're interested in and like kind of let go of any expectation of, you know, what are my skills? What am I getting out of this? You know, where is this going?
Yeah. So sort of along those same lines, you've done some writing for Art House America and the curator. So how did you first get involved with them? Was that sort of following those same rabbit trails of just putting your work out there and seeing what led to the next thing?
I had a blog for a long time, from like 2008 until about 2011, I was blogging pretty regularly. And it's interesting because it was like back before people like met each other online regularly, because I feel like that's, you know, a big part of my social media life now is like making connections with people that I have never met before. But this was like way back before that was a thing. And I had a blog, and you know, I knew other people who had blogs, and there just sort of became this group of people that all met and knew each other. And so one of those people was Alyssa Wilkinson, who started The Curator. And so I was asked by her to be one of their staff writers, like within the first year that The Curator was in existence. And then that was good. That was something that I was writing for like once a month and was steady for a while. And then Jenny Simmons was a part of The Curator, and she is also the editor at Art House America. And so she and I got connected, and that's how I got working with them.
Well, that is always cool to see kind of how the internet like weaves itself into other parts of your life and like kind of pulls you on along with it. I know Ashley and I shared this in our first episode, but we actually met on Twitter and have never ever met each other in real life. We only live a state away, and we've still not like driven halfway between it and met each other. So maybe one of these days we will.
Yeah, someday we'll get to it.
So it is just kind of amazing the connections you make online. Like you said, it's just so different from 2008 when you would never go meet a stranger that you met on the internet. But now that would be perfectly normal, I think, provided you do your due diligence and like Google them first.
Yes, that would be that would be ideal.
Absolutely. So how does your writing process look different when you're writing for Art House America or The Curator, or how did it used to look differently when you were contributing to those publications? I'm not sure if you do anymore.
I'm not with The Curator anymore. And I usually write for Art House like twice a year. It depends. Jenny's just sends me an email and says like, hey, it's time again. I mean, when I write for myself, I don't feel like I have to like write anything in particular. Like if I'm going to write for a publication, especially one of those where it's more like essay oriented, or I guess like the essay form, that I really feel like I have to, you know, flesh out an entire essay's worth of writing. Whereas if I was writing for myself or if I'm writing for my blog or whatever, that I feel like, you know, I can get by with like writing a list or being more like telling instead of like trying to, you know, tell through a story. It's more like here's like what I've learned and more like pragmatic, I guess. And that I give myself permission to like use different types of forms. Whereas if I'm writing for a publication, I want to make sure that, you know, I'm writing a full essay that like gives an entire picture from top to bottom, instead of like the blog always feels like it's just a piece of like a longer story. Every time that you write another entry, it ends up, you know, just piggybacking on the previous one. So you're always telling that story instead of containing it in one space, which is what I would do if I was going to write for Jenny again in Art House today. That's what I would be doing. I want what I'm writing to all come and be like one self-contained unit.
Yeah, that's a really, really good way of thinking of it, as like for a publication, you're trying to paint the whole picture. And on your blog, you're sort of telling an ongoing story in separate little chapters. Because I have tried to write a few things that I wanted to submit for publication, like personal essays. I've written like straightforward informational essays for other sites before. But writing personal essays for a new audience that doesn't know you is really daunting. And it's kind of scary to try and think about condensing what you want to say into this one story that has this one word count, but still makes a full picture of who you are and of the message that you want to get across.
Yeah, it is. It can be like very difficult to do, to put it all together. But one thing that I always am mindful of when I'm trying to write is that essay in French means to try. And so I always think like, okay, it's just like, you're just kind of throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what's going to stick. And sometimes it comes out the way that you expect. And sometimes it's completely different. But I think that that's like really interesting to I don't always know when I sit down to write exactly what I'm going to say or where it's going to go. Or like I was saying about the poetry, you just don't know, you know, how one thought is going to lead to the next and lead to the one after that, and where you could end up may not be anywhere near where you started. And I think that that part is really interesting, and like taking the pressure off by saying like, okay, I'm writing an essay, I'm trying, is like, it's kind of a relief to just say like, okay, I'll just see where this goes and figure it out as I do it.
That is lovely. I took French in college and I don't think drew that correlation between essay and to try. So shame on me. But so you've written essays before, and then you do blogging for yourself, and then you also have a letter writing project. So another completely different kind of writing entirely, with your friend Beth, and it's called Hello There, Friend. Can you tell us a little about how that works, what sparked that idea for the project, and maybe how long you guys have been doing it?
So Beth and I met, we've either met through Flickr or Instagram. We have tried to figure it out and we're not really sure, because there's definite overlap from both of those places. We, you know, it's one of those things where like we've never met in real life and we met on social media and, you know, just sort of connected. And I think I had a question for her. She is like so deep into the concept of gratitude. And I was struggling at one point, and I said, can I email you and ask you some questions about, like, she does the whole, you know, the Anne Voskamp book where she like would write down, what is it, 1,000 gifts, and she would write down every day and she would number things that she was thankful for. And Beth does the same thing. So I was asking her about that. And so we ended up bouncing some emails back and forth, and we both were part of the project Habit. Do you guys know that one?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. It went on for like 6 years, I think, and it just wrapped up last year. It was three women who it would be posting a picture and then a very short description of something. It didn't necessarily have to be about the picture. It could be just about the day or some sort of insight. And they had a bunch of other women who periodically would be like guest contributors. And so Beth and I had both done that, and we were both feeling really sad because they were closing that project at the end of last year. And so Beth emailed me and said, you know, we should come up with something that's like that to collaborate on. And I was like, okay, that's a really good idea. Let's do that. And so we bounced some emails back and forth and came up with this idea where we would Monday through Friday write letters back and forth to each other on a blog. And it would be the same thing where we would have like a picture. And then instead of saying, okay, so it's going to be just a couple of sentences, we decided, you know, you can write as long as you want to. And we would call it Hello, Their Friend. So every letter starts with Hello, Their Friend, and then we write to each other. It's just been like so interesting. It is very different writing than like on a blog or writing an essay, though sometimes there's like overlap of those different types of genres, I guess. But we have been doing it for about a year. February will be a year. It's been really great. It's been like so interesting to have the practice just between the two of us, not to mention the community of people that we have that follow along and participate in some ways, because we always post our pictures on Instagram and that gives, you know, people an opportunity to kind of talk back to us. It's just been like a really cool collaboration, and I'm really grateful that we've had the chance to do it.
Yeah, and I have to say that I've looked at I've looked at a lot of the entries that you guys have put into Hello There Friend, and I have to say that it's a really beautiful depiction of what life looks like when you're trying to show your best artistic self, but you're also balancing that with the real life, because it oftentimes you are not necessarily showing that perfectly curated life, but it's like, you know, this was a hard day or this was a messy day, and that's okay. That's how life goes. And I really appreciate that about that project in particular. And I'm thankful, I guess, to Flickr and Instagram, whichever one, that it was another one of those crazy internet things that led to a really awesome creative collaboration.
Yeah, thank you. It's funny because there's a lot of times we are trying to be as honest as we can without, you know, being too honest about the struggles that we go through. A lot of times it'll be like, I need to email you, like write you an actual email, write to Beth and say, this is what I really wanted my post to say, and just kind of let it all out. And that has helped grow our relationship too, because I feel like, you know, we do have like our public relationship and then we have our private relationship, and it's really... It's just become such a deep friendship. It's just like if you had a pen pal, and like I think about like Julia Child with her pen pal. I don't know if you ever read My Life in France, and they had this deep, beautiful relationship, and it was like years before they ever met each other, but they were like best friends just through writing these letters. And I just, you know, I feel like this, it's just like a really amazing byproduct that she and I have developed such a close relationship.
That is wonderful. I know I loved having pen pals in, you know, elementary school and junior high. I would always meet all my friends at camp every summer and then write to them throughout the year. And it's amazing how deep you can be in a letter versus when you're just, you know, like seeing your friend in the hallway at school or, you know, running into them at the grocery store. It is amazing how much more, I guess, intentional we are with our thoughts and our words when we're sitting down, like pen to paper, or even, I suppose you guys probably write online a lot, but it's very, very different when you're sitting down to tell someone about your day.
It is much more honest, I think, when you actually sit down and write somebody. And we do send letters sometimes. And I actually do have another pen pal that I've been writing to for almost 5 years. And like the depth of the relationship is just so different. And it's not in these little bites that you get from like the internet. It's sitting down and spending a half an hour, you know, putting a pen to a piece of paper and like just saying, this is what's going on with me. This is like the honest, true version that I, you know, I'm going to give you. And it does, it creates such like a different level of intimacy in your relationship. I treasure it. I am all for snail mail, and I I love pen pals and I love letter writing. I like really am a big proponent of that.
Yeah. So do you have any tips for other creatives who would like to collaborate with other people but aren't really sure how to get started? Because I know it can be really daunting to think about, especially if you're not super active on social media already, It can be really weird to think about, like, what I'm just supposed to go meet somebody online and then start this deep friendship with them. Like, it definitely sounds odd, but I think there's this sort of universal longing maybe for creatives who want to be able to share what they're doing with other people. And so I'm just wondering if you have any ideas for how people could get started with a collaboration like that.
I feel like it's really important for you to have the connection with somebody. And it's important for you to have shared interests and then, you know, use that to build what your idea is going to be. But I think probably my biggest advice, if you want to collaborate with somebody, is to pick something and just start. You know, if you can get so bogged down in like brainstorming and how, what is this going to look like? And what is this, you know, to just pick an idea and a simple idea and just start doing something is probably like the pivotal thing, so that you can just get some momentum going in whatever it is that you're trying to do and see if it's going to work and see if it's not going to work. The other thing that I would say is that somebody has to be like the director of the project. And so it's really important for somebody to just say, okay, we need to start. We need to get this going. Let's set a date. Let's go forward and get everything that we need to in a row.
I really like that. I know sometimes, especially if you don't know the person in person, it's easy to be like, oh, well, I don't want to like step on their toes, or, oh, I don't want to seem too eager or anything like that. And I think it's important that someone just, you know, takes a little bit of leadership or even says like, do you mind if I head this up? I think just being honest and open and having good lines of communication would also help just keep a project going and keep it going for the long haul and in a way that benefits both people. So kind of changing courses here, instead of talking about, you know, being really active and starting new projects and being very diligent about what you're working on at any given time, we're really interested in hearing about your 2016 resolution to make no resolutions. So how is that going for you this year, Lindsay?
It's been good. It's been really, really, really good. Last year, I got sucked into the one little word phenomenon. And I was like, okay, I've got to pick a word. It's got to be amazing. And so the word, I was actually in yoga class one day and it was during Shavasana at the end. I was laying on the floor. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to like clear my mind. And the word fearless kept coming to me. And it was like plain as day, fearless. So I was like, okay, let's go into, you know, 2015 is all about fearless. And I feel like I was so beaten up by the word fearless. Like, I feel like you can pick certain words are gonna like just help you float along and other words are gonna like rock your world. And this word, it was awesome because it helped me to like fearlessly jump into things that I think I would have been more hesitant to. Like I said, we moved and to just take fearless right into that, but it was exhausting. And by the end of the year, I was really over fearless. And so I was trying to decide, do I need to pick another word? And I just felt very strongly like, no words, no challenges, no, this is like a time to pull back and not to like push forward. And so I actually heard at the end of the year, I was listening to a podcast and this woman said that her mantra for last year was only what matters. And I was like, that's what I want, is only what matters. And that's going to be like my guiding force for the year. That has really been interesting because it applies to everything. It's like, okay, so, you know, do I need to do the dishes? Well, yes, they are all over the counter. So like only what matters, this is what matters. Do I need to like put everything away and go sit with my children and just enjoy being with them? This is what matters, only what matters. Like there have been already so many opportunities for me to apply that to my life and to make conscious decisions. You know, mindlessly scrolling on the internet is not what matters. There's a time for that. There are parts of it that do matter. There are projects that are very important. There are things from day to day that are from minute to minute, like only what matters means something completely different. But I feel like just staying in that place and keeping that as the forefront, it has helped me to just kind of like hone in on what's important. And so instead of making lists and, you know, keeping up with like the hustle of my own mind and like trying to do things and worrying about all the things that I'm not doing, I've really just kind of let all of that go and said, you know what, I'm just going to focus on what I need to focus on right now and trust that whatever else is out there will continue to be out there. It's not like I have to keep chasing after everything. Maybe it's just a time for me to settle down and take a look at what is around me and just enjoy what matters.
I love that idea so much. It's kind of like another way of phrasing the idea of essentialism, which is a book I've talked about on the podcast before by Greg McEwen. And it's a really kind of freeing way to approach life, because all of a sudden you don't feel like you need to be on Twitter right now, and you don't feel like you should be doing something to promote your latest blog post or whatever. Like, I have actually been not reading very many blogs this year so far. And I've been spending more time reading books and just working on my own creative stuff, and I just haven't been in the blogosphere very much this year. And on the one hand, it feels kind of sad to be away from like all these people that I feel like I know. And on the other hand, it feels really, really great because it wasn't essential and it was getting to the point where I was consuming more than what was healthy, and I needed to just get back to doing those things that matter and being with your family and just focusing on your own creative life instead of on everybody else's creative life.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved that book when I read that. That was like, that definitely hit home. And it is so true about like what like really is essential. And I always think like, okay, if the internet didn't exist, like what do I want my life to look like? And so that's like another part of it that I've really been focusing on is like, without the internet, does my life feel satisfying and full? And are my relationships good? Are things good in my life? And that it's been very freeing. It's been like much more focusing. And I've also been like, I've been really big on the concept of the Sabbath. And I kind of feel like maybe this is like a Sabbath year for me, that like this is just a time to rest from all of the hustle and worry and expectations, and a chance to just kind of rest and enjoy again only what matters in my life.
I think I might need a Sabbath year one of these years. I am going to remember that, Lindsay. That is a wonderful point to make, and I hope that your Sabbath year goes wonderfully for you, and that you at the end feel, you know, rested and like you have focused only on what matters this whole year of 2016.
Well, thank you. I hope it's good for me. I'm excited.
Yeah. Now I feel really honored that you're even on this podcast with us, because that means you counted us as something that, I don't know, something that mattered or something that was worth doing, I guess. So we really appreciate that.
Oh, I am so honored to be on here with you guys. This is really amazing. And I want to say thank you.
Well, thank you for showing up tonight. And the last thing we talk about on every podcast is always what books we love, what books we're reading right now, books that encourage creativity.
The one that was coming to mind most for me was Madeline L'Engle's Walking on Water, which I haven't read for many years. That was like a transformational book for me. It is about, are you guys familiar with that one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so good, because she's just so humble, but so like show up and work and be diligent and be committed. And I feel like, those are huge things. Those are things that really do like just set you apart if you're willing to step into that and just showing up and doing, like she was talking about showing up and doing the work before it was like a thing that everybody was saying on the internet. And that is one that definitely stands out in my mind. And I feel like that's one, even though she talks about being a writer and her own writing life, that it really is applicable to like anybody who's creative.
I definitely agree. I think all of Madeline L'Engle's stuff is just life altering. I remember reading her novels as a kid and just falling in love with them and the way she wrote. And she's a pretty life changing person if you can sit down with one of her books.
Yeah, I definitely enjoy her. And that's one that I want to go back and reread Walking on Water. I think that's probably something I need to put on my non-list for the year.
Yeah, I first read Walking on Water in college as part of a class assignment, and I think I've reread it every year since then because it is kind of a shorter book and it's pretty quick to get through. And I just love it so much. And I feel the same way that Abby did, where even her novels, The Wrinkle in Time series in particular for me, really impacted me as a kid. And like, oh, you can write books like this. And you don't have to write books that happen like necessarily the way the real world happens. And it was just kind of one of those eye-opening experiences.
Yeah, she's amazing. And I think that you are right. Like, a lot of people feel that same way about her.
I would agree. So I think that, you know, Madeline Langell is the perfect note to end this podcast episode, which has been all about, you know, chasing your creativity and really listening to the seasons of your own life, because I think she definitely would have encouraged you to do that, Lindsay. So thank you so much for joining us this evening. We've enjoyed chatting with you, and I think that this interview is just going to do wonderful, wonderful things when it gets out in the world.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been so nice talking to both of you.
Yeah, and before you go, would you want to tell people quickly where they can find you around online, on your website or social media, anywhere like that?
Sure. My website is lindseycrandall.com, and you can find me on Instagram at lindseycrandall.
Great. And everybody should look you up there because your Instagram feed is fantastic. So
thank you.
Hopefully everybody goes and follows you.
Yes, I will second that. Lindsay is a fabulous photographer, so definitely go check out her work and tune in.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for listening to the Chasing Creative podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, be sure to stop by chasingcreative.com to check out the show notes, catch up on past episodes, and subscribe to the podcast.
If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you leave us a review on iTunes. You can also join in the creative conversation by tweeting to us at Abigail E. Krebs or at Brooks Editorial, or by using the hashtag ChasingCreative on Twitter and Instagram.
If there's a guest you'd love to hear from on the podcast, or if you have any feedback for us, drop us a line at chasingcreativepodcast@gmail.com.
Thanks for listening. Until next week, go chase your creative.